Welcome to Banking on Information, where we dive deep into the dynamic world of financial services and technology. Discover the innovative solutions driving the industry forward, explore the latest trends, and uncover the strategies that are reshaping the future of finance. Join us as we unravel the why, what, and how of solution providers in the financial services industry. Stay tuned for insights that will revolutionize the way you think about money and technology.
Welcome to Banking on Information. I'm your host, Rutger Van Fossen. And today with me is Tony Chung. And Tony, welcome to the show. We're going to go through a couple of things, the why, the what's, and the how's of your business. And then we're going to be talking a little bit about the future. But maybe let's dive in right at the beginning. And I know you are familiar with Simon Sinek's Start With Why. So that is my first question to you. Why do you do what you do?
Thank you, Rutger. And thanks for inviting me to participate in this podcast. Yes, I love the Simon Sinek series. I won't be referencing Gateway Computers here, but as far as why we do what we do, my co-founder and I worked at a large Fortune 500 fintech company many years ago. And we started to notice this trend amongst our customer base where they were asking for a solution in this growing private credit space. And after many discussions and attempts to try to do this within a larger organization, you know, we said, you know what, there's, and by the way, there was a lot of dinners and cocktails and having this discussion, but fundamentally, we always came back to, there's a better way. There's a better way to go solve this problem. And we took the leap and, you know, started the ideation phase, prototyping, MVP, and we came to market. So for us, the passion was, we knew there was a better way to go solve this problem.
Yeah, that's a great why to have, to basically want to do better, to do it in a better way. So that is a great driving force behind what you do. So let's talk a little bit about that as well. So what do you do? What use cases do you solve for your customers?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the tagline that we use to use is, you know, we're in a mission to re-architect private credit operations. And what we mean by that is this asset class, you know, the catalyst for it was a global financial crisis, but certainly within the last 5-10 years, the growth has been, pretty tremendous. It's growing like a weed. And when we say re-architect private credit operations, you know, we notice that there's definitely solutions that are out there, but they weren't necessarily built and fit for purpose. And, you know, for us, it's really leveraging automation to create more efficiency so that a lot of the emerging managers can scale with technology faster and also be more competitive so they can, again, focus on generating alpha. For us, and as far as the what also, I think we're in the right place at the right time because there's definitely technologies that are available now to automate a lot of the processing of unstructured data that maybe didn't exist 2 years ago. And that's a big pain point for our target market.
Yeah, so you're helping private credit with the servicing of their credit portfolio. Now, if we go to the how,
yeah,
can you tell me a story of how you created value for one of your customers, and just pick anyone, but I'd love to hear how what you do create a value for your customer.
Yeah, sure. And maybe I'll start with kind of the three ways we do how and what we do. It's, you know, first, it's we digitize loan data. Second is, you know, we focus on building a calculation engine that can adapt to the complexities of private credit loans. And thirdly, you know, lastly, monitor the performance and the risk of the portfolio, all underpinned with reporting and analytics. You know, how we go about doing that is when we talk about digitizing data, you know, the old way of doing it is, you know, give me an Excel template and we'll import it into the system, but it's beyond that, right? It's, again, mm-hmm. What I referred to, there's so much unstructured data in the private capital markets and specifically private credit.
Yeah.
You know, we're using technology to imagine, read information that's coming to you in an email. I mean, for better or worse, email is actually a system. It's actually part of the downstream, you know, system ecosystem, if you will. So, you know, the ability to actually parse data from that's coming to these private credit managers that are on email, or they're constantly receiving, you know, PDF files with a lot of this information that it's static and somebody has to just look at that stuff and go type it into an Excel spreadsheet. It's just crazy. So for us, focusing on how do we automate the digitization of that loan data is paramount. And then again, because the complexities of private credit and how these deals are structured and the calculations that are that have to be performed, we focus on building that calculation engine that's fundamental to making sure that the portfolio and all the analytics are up to date in real time. So that's what we're doing there. And then lastly, it's marrying the you know, we're monitoring all the cash flows of the portfolio. We are monitoring the covenants that are associated with the loan agreement, right? We're monitoring cash flow. You bring all that together, and now there is a whole platform that, you know, can manage the, you know, this volume of activity in real time, basically.
And so doing those three things, right? The digitization of data, keeping everything up to date in real time, and monitoring the cash flows, how much value does that create for your customer?
Ballpark. I mean, the ROI, it's, I'll give you an example. You know, we had, there's one anecdote where there's a manager who started off as a $1 billion private credit shop. In over the 5 or 6 years, they grew to, you know, over almost 10 billion. And when they started their operation, they had 4 people. Now they're up to 20. They have 4 open recs. They can't hire people fast enough. And hiring people is not a good solution.
Right.
So here, the ability to scale with technology and not have to add more headcount. I mean, the ROI, it's almost instantaneous in our
view. And you actually allow them to scale. So they wouldn't be able to do the business. They would have to add more people and more spreadsheets, which is not scalable long-term.
Yeah, and not, agreed, right? And not to, you know, be an alarmist here, you know, but, you know, we had some bank failures last year, Silicon Valley Bank and others. You know, managing risk is a thing.
Right?
And you can, no matter how many people you do it, there's always going to be human error, right? So to the extent that you can actually create some standardization and processes around that, again, that's some of the value that we bring to the market today.
Yeah, no, that sounds like you're bringing lots of value with your solution to private credit. The last question that I have is, we're going to do something that I call futures thinking. It's basically thinking about what a possible future could look like. So the futures thinking is in plural because we don't know what the future is. Right. But we could think about what potentially could look like. So if you think about 2034, what is the private credit market or the market that you operate in? What does that look like? And then maybe let's talk about that first, and then let's think about kind of like, well, what does that mean for today? But let's first start with what does the market look like in 2034 in a way that you could see a possible future?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, I'm fortunate in the sense that I think I can use the private equity market as a frame of reference, right? So when I got into the private equity fintech space almost 20 years ago, it's not like it is today, right? There were a handful of providers, you know, certainly there were fund managers out there. Now there's this whole democratization of the private equity asset class that probably wasn't envisioned 10 years ago. So using that as a backdrop, you know, I think for the private credit market, it'll be more of a, similar to private equity, more of an evolution versus a revolution. I think the three things that will continue to stand out is certainly technology advancements and data-driven decision-making. And the second, and I'll come back and maybe provide more detail. The second, I think it will be just more increased institutional involvement. And the third is global expansion and diversification of the investment strategy. So, you know, on the first point, you know, why technology advancement, data-driven decision-making means, look, the technology will revolutionize in the sense that it's just going to add more efficiency. I think AI will get much better, right? And then, you know, these technologies will become more mainstream in how they're adopted, right? Because again, if private equity, the private equity industry is any, if there's a data point, we see the trajectory of the private credit market following the same path, if not even faster, right? On the second point around more institutional involvement, You know, we saw the institutional investors also being direct investors in private equity. And it's the same thing is starting to happen here, where they're also becoming direct lenders. So to some extent, they're, when you're talking about private credit lenders, the whole concept of the GP and the LP goes away. It's because the LPs are also doing more direct lending. And I think we're going to see more of that as they also see higher returns to fund, you know, future pension plans and so forth.
Yeah.
And lastly, around global expansion, I'm going to use kind of a real life case story, if you will, here. So a couple of years ago, I was in Sao Paulo in Brazil for business. Yeah. And, you know, traffic is horrendous in Sao Paulo. I don't know if you've ever been. Yeah. And it was, I had a 10:30 flight and somebody recommended I should leave the hotel at 5 o'clock to get there early. And I was like, this must be crazy, but I'm going to heed their advice. I'm fine. So I'm in the car and it's only 20 miles away. And oh my God, the traffic was just insane. So I asked the driver and I said, why is it so bad? Has it always been this way? And his answer to me was, he says, Tony, you know, owning a car is a proof of belonging to the middle class. And the middle class is growing, so more people are buying cars. So as it relates to the global expansion, I think, you know, as the global economy continues to evolve and emerging markets grow, you can see how this asset class will also start to accelerate and there'll be more opportunities outside of the traditional North America and Europe. Again, you just see it every day sitting in traffic and when you ask why is this happening, again, I think there's definitely some parallels there.
So in 2034, much more democratization, much more globally spread out. And then if you think about that future, that possible future that we could see 10 years from now, how does that make you make decisions today in your business today? So what are you doing to get ready for a possible future like that?
It's a great, great question. The thing that my co-founder and I think about is, what is the talent that we need to accelerate some of the objectives that we want to achieve, right? So, you know, how do we think, so to my point about, okay, if this, we think this is going to happen, what sort of expertise in addition to what we have on the team that we have now, do we need around data? Like, what does that mean, right?
Yep.
When it comes to, if we're going to certainly expand on AI or even start to implement blockchain, right? Because if we think this asset class would become even more democratized, we don't have all the answers, right? So how do we start to bring in that talent that can basically start to shape the future today, right? So we make sure that we're doing things that are foundational versus we get to a situation 5 years and I was like, oh my God, we have to basically rebuild the application, right? Which many firms unfortunately do. So we want to try to get ahead of that today as best as we can.
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Tony. Really appreciate all your insights. Thank you very much for your story.
Yeah, thank you, Rutger. Glad to be here.
This was another episode of Banking on Information. If you have any questions for Tony or myself, reach out on LinkedIn. If you enjoyed this episode, like, subscribe, and share in your network. Until next time, choose to be curious.